Direct from Fort Meade, Maryland, this is DinFos Live.
Hi, everybody. It's Major David J. Murphy, host of DinFos Live. Thank you so much for joining us for this very special episode where we actually went on the road down to Joint Base Andrews. It was really an exciting time. We had some minor technical difficulties, so we weren't able to record the intro and broadcast that out, which is why I'm doing this intro now. I want you to know who we actually spoke to while we were down there. We spoke to Major Katharina Cheeseman, the 316th Wing PA Chief, Mr. Jai Scott, the Naval Air Facility Washington PA Chief, and finally, from the 89th Airlift Wing, Staff Sergeant Gabrielle Wynn, the NCIC of that organization. We hope you find their discussion on various public affairs topics interesting and informative. Without further ado, please enjoy the show. Thank you all for being here today for this very special DinFos Live on the Road edition. And before we get too far into what it is we're going to be talking about, which is public affairs and communication strategy, first, maybe if you could, Major Cheeseman, can you tell us about this amazing facility and also this wonderful display that's in the middle of the room here for us?
Absolutely. So we are in the SparkX Innovation Cell, as you mentioned. It's the innovation hub for Joint Base Andrews, but also the National Capital Region. So its purpose is to solve problems at the lowest level. You have an issue, maybe it costs too much to have, for example, this machine right here starts printing like things for dental. And usually it costs $500, but for printing here, it's $5. So it saves the Air Force money, but also gets you what you need. Here, for example, is a small UAV that was 3D printed specifically to help people train how to fly UAVs, because as you can imagine, it's pretty expensive if you crash it, if it's the real deal. So 3D printed small UAV, much cheaper to crash and much better when it comes to getting your competency up.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, well, why don't we get onto the public affairs and communication strategy of it all, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself and your background in the world of public affairs.
Yeah, so I joined in 2012. That's also when I went to DinFos last, so it's been a hot
second.
Don't
do the math.
Yeah. So I started at Spang Dahlem Air Base. I was privileged to deploy to Poland. That was the first time that Russia invaded Crimea. After that, I went to Special Operations, worked with our combat controllers and our pararescue men. Then after that, I went to this program called AFIT at George Mason, where I got my strategic communications degree. Follow on with an excellent tour at the Pentagon, really recommended. I know it gets a bad rap, but I think it's fantastic. I got to work with the undersecretary and our press desk, and then a follow-on assignment to Cyber Command, where I learned how not to click on all the links.
Indeed. Very, very much want to stay away from those risky clicks, right? All right. Mr. Scott?
Well, I joined the military in 2002 as a basic steel photographer. I was my first duty station, and that's around the same time that I went through DinFos.
Don't do the math.
So then my first duty station was on the USS Enterprise, and then we did a merge, Navy did a merge for all communicators to become mass communication specialist. And then from there, I went to All Hands Magazine at DMA, Defense Media Activity, did a couple years there, then got out, bounced around the DOD a little bit as a civilian. A couple of jobs was at Walter Reed Public Affairs, Army Research Lab Public Affairs, and now I'm here at Joint Base Andrews on the Navy side doing public affairs. So,
okay. Yep. Great, thank you.
Okay, well, I joined, I enlisted into the Air Force in 2018. And before that, I was studying at the University of Alabama, studying telecommunication and film because I wanted to be a reporter. So I did come in. My recruiter told me they had that in the Air Force, so I was like, of course I have to do it. And so I came in as a guaranteed broadcast journalist. My first duty station was at RAF Alconbury in England, where I was a traditional broadcaster for 3 years, and then whenever I PCS to Turkey, that's when the merger happened, and I was working as a public affairs specialist, and now I am here at the 89th Airlift Wing as the NCOIC and getting my master's in strategic and digital communication.
Wonderful. Well, that's perfect, and that's great. Just right in line with what we're going to be talking about today. So looking to see how you can exercise some of those skills you've been learning to inform us. So tell us first about the mission of your particular organization. What does it do and how do you support it with PAFX?
Okay, so the 89th Airlift Wing, our mission is to advance national interests through delivering diplomacy every day. Our customers are military and elected officials. We transport the president, vice president, and all the senior leaders. And so even though there is some red tape about what we can publish as public affairs, we really try to get, you know, behind the scenes and highlight our airmen and how we can deliver diplomacy and how, you know, our people can help with operations here at Joint Base Andrews and, you know, across the world.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Well, our mission is to support the 3,700 Navy and Marines and getting them to meet their readiness requirements for deploying globally. Also, our mission is as an executive transport wing. So we fly around some of the higher level Navy personnel and civilian personnel, like the Secretary of the Navy, the Chief of Naval Operations, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, along with other, you know, as a PA, as a public affairs officer, I support the 10 of command. So I'm a one of one shop. So I support the largest reserve center on the East Coast, which is on this base, along with a couple of operational commands that are on this base as well.
Okay, great.
And I get the pleasure of working with all these people. So Joint Base Andrews, the 316th Wing, we really manage the day-to-day operations. So if you see a Joint Base Andrews Facebook page, we run that. But obviously, it's not just the 316th Wing that we're speaking for. And so daily operations, but also really looking at those big picture things, right? So we are so close to the Pentagon, we're so close to Capitol Hill, we're so close to the White House, and that means that we are usually the ones that support those big events, particularly like, for example, the NATO summit, the most recent prisoner exchange, and of course, any sort of presidential airlift. And while you know, Gabby's unit is the one who flies them, we often are the unit that will escort media onto the flight line to capture the presidential departure and arrival. So it's really joint, and it's very much a team sport, and it's an amazing place to be.
Absolutely. No, this is a wonderful base. So tell me more about those unique challenges that you face within your organization and related to your mission, and how specifically you use public affairs to tackle those challenges.
Who wants to start with the challenges?
I can start.
Yeah.
So, being a tenant unit here at Joint Base Andrews, the 89th falls under Air Mobility Command, and Joint Base Andrews falls under Air Force District of Washington. So we have two different MAGCOMs on one base, and sometimes our priorities, like what our boss's priorities, like way up there, sometimes they don't really align to each other. So there's challenges in that with what, you know, we cover, what's important to us, and, you know, our priorities. So I would say that would be one of the main challenges.
I think that's a challenge for all of us, is aligning what the bosses, as you say, their priorities are compared to the bosses on this base. And then also supporting it's hard to support so many different missions. I think that's a huge challenge for, I know my office, and I know for certain, you know, being stretched so thin with the 316th, trying to support all the tenant commands and supporting their missions on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, and for us, we have 80 tenant units on Joint Base Andrews. And some of the PA partners that couldn't be with us today are the 113th Wing. They fly the F-16s, which do any sort of scramble if there's something that comes into the NCR region that, you know, FAA is like, yo, we were not comfortable with you here. So F-16s, boom, from Joint Base Andrews. And I think we also have an air refueling wing. And so we have so many partners here, but everybody wants a piece of public affairs, whether it's like, can you cover my 5K? Like, no, thank you. I don't really want to cover your 5K. Or, hey, there's a suspicious package on base. How do you coordinate with the right unit that it might be close to and make sure that the people on base feel safe and comfortable as well? So I think just that, and also communication, being joint, like we're all on different systems. And so it seems really simple. Like, how do you tell somebody that there's something going on base? Suspiciously difficult when it comes to Joint Base Andrews. So really rely on us being able to know the right people and have that network to share as fast as possible, particularly when there's something high visibility.
I think if I can chime in just a little bit, I think her Please. Challenge, and correct me if I'm speaking out of turn, but you also have the base housing. So that's a whole nother challenge that, you know, we deal with on a lower level, but she's in charge of that, not directly, but the 316th is in charge of that. So trying, I think that's a huge challenge to bring in those civilians and those spouses into the day-to-day operations and knowing who to talk to, when to talk to them, and I just, it's a lot on our plates.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So talk to me a little bit about some of the ways in which you translate and make understandable the commander's intent, you know, your lines of effort, your priorities that your commander has outlined. How do you translate those and make them into actionable public affairs tactics and strategies?
So I would say right now a really big thing for us is recruiting. With the 89th, we are one of few wings, if not like one of the only ones, that recruits people. So we recruit a lot of flight attendants, we recruit maintenance, we recruit comms people. So I think my counterpart, Captain Cromie, and I, whenever we create our messages, we create to a different audience because we're not solely creating products for, you know, just for our Facebook page, because our Facebook page has a lot of, like, civilians or fans of the 89th. We really try to keep, like, messaging somewhat internal to us, but also to hone in on those recruitment aspects. So whenever, you know, our teams go on the road, they can use our products that we create, you know, either taking photos of maintainers or flight attendants doing their job and like translating that into how they could work for the 89th. That is a way that we get after tackling our commander's priorities.
Oh, I thought you were so we talked about this before we went live, but I think being intentional, right? So the commander's sure. intent is it's clear. For us, it's take care of people, take care of mission, which, by the way, is super broad, right? But it's how do you be intentional in this space? At first, it's thinking. It's taking a breath. And then it's planning. Then it's doing. And the doing is really not the hard part. It's all the assessing. So how do you know that you're meeting the intent? How do you know you're achieving outcomes? And I think that is where we as public affairs professionals, and frankly, like outside of the DOD, just marketing and PR folks, it can be really challenging if you don't have the right tools to measure that outcome. And I think, Jay, I don't want to put you on the spot, but you had a really good way of saying like how you know you're successful or not.
As you fail. Oh, yeah, yes. I think to kind of touch on that, it's, you know, you're doing a good job. The only time you know that you're not doing a good job is when you hear it from the higher-ups. Right. So basing it off of that, I think it's a difficult part of our job. But also talking about recruitment, that's something that, you know, we're pushing as well. So we have culinary specialists at one of our squadron that fly with the Chief of Naval Operations mm-hmm. and everybody. So we're trying to tell their stories and trying to strategically place the information that we put out to those culinary specialists that would want to participate and want to join that squadron. So it's a challenging part of the job to know what to post, what not to post, how is that aligning with not only our supervisor, our bosses, but our boss's boss. I keep on saying it, that's your thing. But, you know, just telling the stories of those around, those on this base, and specifically, you know, because we're on an Air Force base, honestly, it's telling the Navy story and not kind of getting drowned out by the overabundance of airmen.
Sorry.
Yes.
Indeed. Yes. Talk to me a little about how you handle crises. Obviously, you all each represent different parts of the organization. You have the base support, but you also have your tenant organizations. How do you all individually handle crises at your organizations?
Yes. Okay, this is going to be taken out of context, but I'm going to say it anyway. I kind of love a good crisis. partially because it really allows you to test how good your team is. And also, you can quickly see the areas you need to improve. Right. Obviously, we want to be able to perform to the level that we need to answer the call and make sure the mission's taken care of. But I think the first thing is taking a breath, right? Like, everybody is going to be feeling like they need to go in action immediately. But if you don't take that 1 to 2 minutes and just think about what are the questions I need to ask, who do I need to talk to, you're going to spin in the wrong direction. And so I think after that, it's bringing the team together, finding the right people to talk to. And if you don't know who to talk to, finding the people who do know. You know, being the subject matter expert of subject matter experts is kind of what we do. And so on Joint Base Andrews, we have a variety of crises. Like, we have everything from your daily crises. We have a lot of people who try to get on base, trying to jump the fence or drive through the gate. Obviously, this is not just a normal base. We have the President of the United States flying out, as well as heads of state, a variety of prime ministers and presidents from around the world. So safety is paramount here. And I think that's kind of our bread and butter when it comes to what small crisis. How much information do you put out? When do you put it out? Who needs to know this information? If you put it out too soon, will you be wrong? And so I love that moment where you kind of have to lean in and just go for what you know as much as you know as fast as you can and be as right as possible and then be okay with changing tactics if it's not working. But we have already, and I'm 2 months, 3 months on the job, we've already been through a couple little iterations of that. Wow. So what about you?
No.
That was,
I think that was a perfect answer for, I think,
you
I'm sorry.
That
was an okay answer. No, that was, I think that's as good as you can get with that answer. I think she hit the nail on the head.
I would just say, for us, it's also knowing who your chain of command is. At the 89th, we're a little bit different. Of course, we always will, you know, refer to AMCPA, but we also work with the White House Military Office. We work with the Secretary of the Air Force Public Affairs, and there's like so many avenues that we need to go through, and you know, so many people that we need to loop in, because with Executive Air Fleet, it's going to be on the TV, it's going to make national news, and people need to know that, you know, the president's okay, or the vice president's okay, or whoever's flying our executive fleet, there, everything is fine and it's handled. So
I'm sorry, I do have one thing to add. I think getting our airmen, sailors, Marines to understand the why. Right, to understand why this is important. When somebody jumps the gate, why is this important? Because we have families, we have kids on this base. Why is a suspicious package important? Because it could potentially kill someone, or you know, somebody running a gate, or not just because it's national security and because of the base that we're on, but if you understand it now, that follows you throughout the rest of your life. So understanding your why, understanding why you wear the uniform, and if something happens, who to call, when to call, where to call, and knowing the right people to touch and talk to get the job done.
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect answer. Perfect.
Thank you. say it one more time.
I have a mic on me. I am mic'd all the time. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the air show. Now, Joint Base Andrews has a pretty, I think, unique air show amongst, you know, air shows. Lots of bases host air shows, but you're the only one that I know of that actually features both the Thunderbirds and the Blue Angels at one air show, or at least, I don't know if it's every time, but you've had that here. So talk to me about the air show specifically in terms of what you're doing to prepare for it. I know you haven't actually been through the air show process here at this base, but again, talk to me a little bit about what goes into it and also how it affects the different organizations here behind just the 316th.
So we support the 316th with the air show. This will be my third, I believe.
Oh, wow.
And going through the air show prep, there's a lot that goes into it. A lot of things that you really don't think about if you're not a part of the preparation, as far as parking and busing and, you know, vendors and, you know, everything. It's just a lot that goes on. So what my job is to support 100% the 316th. So whatever they need from our side of the airfield, whether it be people to help with parking, vendors, or people to help with food prep or distribution of food, I don't think you need security forces because we couldn't help with that. But as well as coverage. I mean, I'm you know, myself and Sergeant Wynn are, you know, it's three, one, and then two of you guys. So if you need help covering the air show, we are always there to help. But I think the majority of the heavy lifting comes from the 316th. So you have any?
What does the 89th do for the air show?
So we coordinate like flight line operations and stuff like that. We're just on the other end of the house with coordination. So I know like there's a lot of base coordination going on, of course. And so the other piece of that too is the flight line, because the 89th owns the flight line. So all that coordination, public affairs wise, I know that, you know, the STEAM program, I forgot what that actually stands for.
Science, technology, engineering,
arts, math. I remember arts and math. So this year, the theme for it is Fly Like a Girl, and we are showcasing all of the female aviation jobs, and that goes along with recruiting. So along with, you know, helping with the flight line operations, we are advancing our own priorities and our own messaging in that way, along with helping JBA with all the other messaging.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would say another thing is the flight line is still active, right? Like the if the president needs to fly out on that weekend, preferably not, but we don't say no to the president. So last time we had an air show, the president did need to fly out last minute. And so the 89th Airlift Wing was like, well, people are going to notice when Air Force One takes off. Like, this is
make it part of the air show. That's what
so
I
we
say.
Did, right? So they did. And so they pulled it together and worked with the White House Communication Office, worked with the National Security Council, and ensured, like, hey, no one's going to not take a picture of Air Force One taking off. How do we leverage that? And that was something day of that happened. Yeah. So I think that's a great example of how public affairs can be flexible. But yeah, my meetings are currently a lot about like app development, porta potty parking, just like things that I wouldn't ever think I would talk about as public affairs. But really, the more we understand, the more we can help people solve problems with the public affairs tools that we have. And then look at opportunities, right? We have the Washington Spirit, we have the Nationals, we have the Caps, we have the Commanders, we have all these sports teams in the NCR, the National Capital Region. Is there something we can do to leverage this air show and this open house to really welcome the public and say, this is your military?
Yeah.
And I think working with sports teams can leverage that.
Absolutely. For you, Mr. Scott, you know, you said you've done this for a few times. So again, I know that the Blue Angels and Thunderbirds have done the air show at the same time. And it's very rare they do that, but they don't do that every time, right? That was a special occasion.
No, not every time. Okay. I think last year was the Thunderbirds, or last time was the Thunderbirds. So Thunderbirds again. So they don't do it at the same time. I guess their schedules have to align.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you're all DINFOS train killers. You've all been through the schoolhouse at one point in time in your lives. Talk to me a little bit about the lessons that you learned from your time at the schoolhouse and how they have helped you succeed in your job as a communication professional.
I've recently taken some advanced and intermediate courses along with, you know, my time in tech school. But I would say as a young NCOIC, a young quote-unquote superintendent, if you will, a lot of these courses, I've learned to just like advocate for myself, advocate for my office and my people, and just like using those lessons that I've learned about how to manage a budget, how to make a comm plan, how to, you know, just make anything like communication-wise, just like putting it out in the front and getting all the information you can from your subject and advancing your commander's priorities and stuff like that. So I've used DINFOS Pavilion and Waypoints more than I ever thought I would since being in this job. And I would say that those are two resources that have really helped me just like refresh some of those skills that I might have forgotten, or refresh some of those reference points like AFIs and anything else. So
AFI is for our non-Air Force audience.
Air Force instructions. So sorry, I don't know what they are called in the Navy.
an instruction. So it's been a while since I've been to DINFOS, but just thinking back to when I went through, I think DINFOS is a solid foundation. You know, just like college, it's a solid foundation. You'll get the more you go back, the more tools get into your toolbox, you know. But once you get on the job, that's when you really learn the depth of what your job actually is. I think DINFOS is a tool that needs to be utilized, and I think, in my opinion, is underutilized. And I think the service members need to go and They need to use DenFOS in the schoolhouse and also have mentors from the schoolhouse. I think it's okay to have, you know, Major Murphy and go approach you and say, hey, you know, I know you're an instructor, but can you be my mentor? You know what I mean? Because if I'm out in the field and I don't know something, who better to reach it back out to than an instructor at the schoolhouse that teaches it every day? Mm-hmm. Also doing things like this, having PA friends or public affairs friends that you can kind of, you know, that you can talk to. You know, iron sharpens iron. So if you know, you can go to someone and say, hey, take a look at this, and they tell you it's crap, then you got to rethink the way you're doing things. So I think I would love to go back to DenFOS. I'm a little old now, but never too old. But I think you have to use it for what it's there for.
Okay.
You know, ditto. I would say network, right? So I think a lot of people who come out of Defense Information School, for those who don't know what DenFOS is but are watching DenFOS Live.
If you don't know what it is, how did you find this show?
This is my mom.
Oh, yeah, of course. True.
It is the network, right? So you might not be able to solve the problem, but somebody else is smart, and somebody else can solve that problem with you. And so I know that every time I've gone, I've come out been like, oh, my goodness, my boss is going to travel to Hill Air Force Base, and I knew the PA who was there because of Defense Information Network. So I think, like, always in your day-to-day life, be kind, be genuine, be authentic, but also those relationships will be there in the future, so treat people well because they will remember you.
Yeah, it's a small career field.
It's a small career field, even across the Navy.
Hey, the best and the brightest.
Well, that's one thing we tell students, right, is that their networking starts there, right, at the schoolhouse. The students they're working with alongside every day for the 10 weeks or so that they're there, for at least for our program, for PAX-Q, they're going to be connected and they're going to start that networking there. And so it's going to carry with them for the whole rest of their careers. There's still people who I talk to, who I went to school with, and that networking never goes away. So we've talked about what DenFOS provided you. What have you had to learn on the job? What have you had to learn from doing the job of being a public affairs professional that, you know, no school could really prepare you for, in all honesty?
Multitasking. I mean, as a sailor, we have to, even in my job now, I'm no longer a sailor. I just support the sailors, but I'm also the protocol officer. I'm also in charge of, or assist with NWR. I also, there's other things that I do, but multitasking and being able to balance the things that you do when you get to your duty station is something that you don't learn in DenFOS, and I think it's kind of difficult to learn. Again, it's just a foundation when you go to DenFOS, but getting to your first duty station is learning how to balance your job and doing the things that you or learning how to balance what you do on a day-to-day basis.
I would say that it's just, I never would have thought that I would have to go like a little bit outside of my expertise of what I've learned in DenFOS. At no point did I ever think I would also be a photojournalist as well, coming in as a broadcaster. And just like knowing all, needing to know basically all aspects of PA to be an effective communicator.
And the question is, what DenFOS could not teach me?
Right. What did you have to learn on the job, right, that DenFOS didn't prepare you for?
People.
Yes.
Like, when I graduated DenFOS, I don't even know what it's called now, PAQC back in the day, you know, I thought, okay, great, I have the skills. And then I walked into my shop and I realized that it's not about skills, it's about people. And 90% of my time was spent with folks, like figuring out problems, whether it's personal or professional. And so I think that DenFOS is there to give you the technical skills, but what we as airmen, as sailors, as Marines, Guardians, I'm sure Coasties, our higher calling is to be leaders and to be followers. And I think that's something that DenFOS is good at, giving you an environment to operate in, but not necessarily giving you the training. And public affairs cannot happen without people.
Talk to me a little bit about, you mentioned some of them earlier, Sergeant Wynn Pavilion and other resources. Talk about some of the resources that you have found to be useful for you and that you would recommend our audience check out.
Templates. There's a template for almost everything. On DINFOS Pavilion, I've definitely, I just looked up an SOP template yesterday because I'm working on a SOP for our unit public affairs representatives right now. But also needing to justify what you're doing. And that's where a lot of DOD directives and instructions, that's where you can find them. And that's how you can justify, like, oh, we do this because of this reason. We can support this or we can't support that because of this reason. And I think just knowing where I can find my actual answers to tell people besides saying, oh, no, I'm sorry, we can't support that. There's a reason. So I think that would be the most useful thing that I've gotten out of DINFOS Pavilion.
I'm happy saying I will not support that. But I think some of the tools that I use, social media, there's one for former MCs, MC Talk Shop. It's on Facebook, and there's about 2,000 people. I went back and looked. There's about 2,000 people on that are either currently MCs or prior MCs, as well as the DC Shoot-Off. The DC Shoot-Off is a really good tool. It's a time to get together with other shooters, other professionals in the communication field, and learn from them. And then also towards the end, they give you an assignment. Go out and produce a photo story. And the winner gets, you know, goodies. You know, what better motivation than to give you something for free? So those two things are things that I would recommend.
So I think connecting, especially as public affairs, we're very lucky that we have relationships with our community and that we're in charge of managing those relationships. So reach out to the folks who do public relations and marketing in your community. So for example, we have a relationship with the Nationals baseball team, and we're going to sit down with the Nationals marketing director and their PR firm and just trade best practices, and frankly, probably be more in listening mode than sharing mode. But there are professionals outside of the DOD who do this work and do it really, really well. I'd also encourage us, like, reach out to journalists. What pitch sounds good to them? What do they actually care about? How does the editorial process work? There are folks in this community, again, outside of DOD, but in the PR/PA community, who can really invest and give us those tools to be more successful. So, and let's leverage those relationships that we work on. I would say that for sure.
Talk to me a little about working in the joint environment, right? This is Joint Base Andrews. And so talk to me about some of the unique situations and considerations that come from, again, working in this joint environment.
I'm going to steal what Jai said earlier. Sorry, I have the mic. So language, words, right? Trying to understand what they mean when he says CNO. Like, what is that? Because that's certainly in NSA a different thing than in the Navy. And I think understanding not only their language and their words, but also their culture. Like, when do Marines respond poorly when you act cavalier around them? The answer is sometimes yes, like, especially if they're higher ranking. And Air Force culture, we're a little bit more informal. But being a part of a joint world is being a part of a joint culture and being open to listening and learning and correcting and asking questions. And so I won't steal all your thunder, Jai, about the language, but because I think like the chief's penning is a great example of, like, well, nobody even knows how important that is.
Yeah, so I think that's the thing. So the communication, right? Going in, and if we're at a joint base, the Navy or if the Air Force asks me to do something, coming in and kind of training me up on the importance of this, the protocol of it. We have a chief's pinning this Saturday. So going over to your squadron or your command and talking to the shooter or whoever will assist me and telling them how important the chief's, the E7 pinning is, it's a huge deal in the Navy. And so if they don't know that, then they're going to walk into it thinking it's just a regular old reenlistment, when it's not. It's a big deal, and historically is huge. But I think you hit the nail on the head. It's about communication. It's about talking to them and for the Navy dumbing down what we say and how we go about doing things. But I think we do a good job here. I think, you know, with her predecessor, Major Hill and Major Cheeseman, they give me the support that I need. I don't know if all bases are like that, but, you know, with their shop, she's always like, how can I help? You know, how can I help tell the story of the Navy? And I think that's a bridge that needs to be built everywhere, is, you know, getting together and communicating with one another and helping one another. Whether I can help her or not, you know, I'm just going to extend that olive branch and let you know that I'm here for your help and you as well. So, yeah.
You got anything?
Nope.
Awesome. All right, great. Well, that brings us to the end of this month's program. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Before we say goodbye to you all, what is one last thing you'd like to add before you go on with the rest of your day?
Read the news. Watch the news. Listen to the news. As public affairs professionals, I have been shocked across my career when people don't know what's going on. Just like not even today, but just in general. So our job is to be informed so that we can make informed decisions and provide advice and counsel to our commanders, to flag if something is relevant to our commanders so that when they do their mission, their operations, that they are most knowledgeable in that information and decision space. So I love the BBC Global News Hour. It posts twice a day. It's 30 minutes. It gives you an international perspective. If you're not reading New York Times, Washington Post, and Wall Street Journal, those are the big three that a lot of our policy leaders care about, then you know you need to do that. And then, of course, beyond that, looking at the early bird, looking at defense news, it's really, really important that you know what's going on. And it can be a little bit tiring, but it's also your job. So if you don't know what's going on in the world, you're wrong. So please, please, please invest in that. And it will really make you not just a better citizen of the world, but also a better public affairs professional.
And I'll say on that same note, there are many tools out there for anyone who's interested that help condense, summarize, and help articulate the news in ways that are easily digestible. So if you have access to those tools, use them because they will definitely make your lives a lot easier.
Two things. We're communicators, so learn how to communicate. Walk around to these other shops and talk to these people. You don't have to always show up when your supervisor says, go get me a story. You can show up just to get to know people, and that in turn will allow them to open up and be more receptive to you when you do show up with your camera recording device or whatever you need. And then also, you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't have a mentor. Have a mentor in this field. I have a mentor in almost every aspect of my life. Have a mentor at the very least in this field, someone that can be very honest, brutally honest with you, and let you know when your stuff sucks, because it at times it does. So those are my two things to pass on.
Saving the best for last.
I don't know if it'll be the best, but it will be the last. I would say always be open to learn. As public affairs, things change rapidly. Our processes always are changing. AFIs instructions are always changing. So just staying on top of like what you know you need to know, what you need to do, and just be open to learn. Yes, we're public affairs, but every base that you go to is going to be different, and you need to learn like maybe a new skill or like the nuances of the base. So just be open to learn.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you all so much for your taking time out today. Really appreciate it. Hopefully, those of you who were able to tune in learned a little bit from our guests here today, because I think they all offered something that was very interesting and insightful about their missions. All right. Well, that is it for our show this month. Thank everyone for tuning in and watching our show. Please tune in next month on October 30th, when we'll be having Colonel David Butler, the Special Assistant for Public Affairs for the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, on talk about his mission and how he uses public affairs to help support his bosses and his commanders. Well, again, that is our show for this month. Remember, if you're interested in listening to our show, know that that is also a podcast. You can find it on your podcatcher of choice. Just search DINFOS Live. All right, for everyone here at the SparkX Center, I want to, of course, thank our amazing guests for being on the program, and we will see you all next month. Bye, everybody.